Hello and welcome to Northeast Access Radio, a near event to you, and also welcome to the Senior Citizens Program. We're coming to you on a frequency of 90.3, and we're going to talk about momentous occasions now. And last Saturday week there was a momentous occasion in the Mansion House in the Oak Room. And the Oak Room has been around for quite a long time. The Dawson House, Dawson Street was named after, and Mr. Dawson, whoever he was, owned the house, which is now the Mansion House, and it was acquired by the city council, or the corporation, it was called way back. And there was a momentous occasion in there Saturday week, and it was the launch of our friend here, Paul Murray's poetry book. Now, we're not going to start at the finish. We're going to start at the very beginning.
Oh, good.
When the pencil and sharpening days was... Now, how in the name of the Lord did you get into poetry?
Well, it's to tell you the truth, way back in the 60s, I used to play in a band. And I used to play the trumpet, but I wasn't a terrific trumpet player. Well, actually, what I was good at the time was the writing the songs for the band, you know.
Lyrics and all sorts of things as well.
That's actually what I was good at. I wasn't that good of a trumpet player.
Did you sing them as well?
Well, not harmonised. We had a singer, so we didn't have to sing them. But I just got used to sort of getting words together, and they'd say we need another song for next week or something like that. It was just a bit of publicity more than anything else. So I got used to doing it, and so when the band broke up, which it did, actually I my brother was the leader of the band, and he went to the States. So when he left, all the talent left with him. So we had to go out and find other things to do.
Had to find gainful employment.
Exactly. So by then, of course, I was courting, and I had my girlfriend around, and finally we got married. So there wasn't an offer of time to be going out playing in bands that you got very little pay for. We got paid by drinks at the 21st birthday party, stuff like that at the time, you know, get a few beers basically. And so then when the kids started arriving, that pushed the band business out of business, so to speak. And I did manage through the years to send a couple of songs that I wrote into the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, yeah.
Now, of course, they never got anywhere, but I did send them in. And that sort of became a sort of a hobby with my... I have another brother then who actually played the guitar, and we used to go around the local pubs and give a couple of rendering of a few. And again, I would write the songs at the time. But it wasn't a big time. We never got paid in the pubs or anything like that, you know. And so I think that's where it came from. So later on, I had a lot of stress in the job that I was in at the time. And the doc used to say to me, you should get yourself some kind of a pastime to do something. And I was saying, oh, I don't know what I could do. Yeah. What could I do? I actually tried yoga, and I tried a few other things. I was more having, I won't go into details, but it was kind of stressed me. I felt kind of dizzy at times and all sorts of things like that. And finally then I said, I know what I do. I'd start writing sort of songs or something like that. Just give myself, you know. I said to Miss, by the way, I'm going to be writing here, so don't be getting worried about me. So I said, yeah, you better do something, because you're losing too much time out of work. Because your doc was saying, take time off.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I said, okay. So I started writing about things that I knew. I had actually written a few things about my kids, which are a great method of what would you write about? You write about the kids, you know, how they go out into the world, or they start messing around, and you have to bring them out to the sea for the swim for the summertime, and little bits of things like that. So and then
domestic issues.
Domestic issues. So I wrote a few little things, not much. And I remember the first thing I wrote, I was actually going to I went to English class in a kind of a church hall over in Inchicore, and the guy that was running it said, "You should send that into the parish magazine." And I said, "Oh yeah, okay." Mm-hmm. So I said, "Now, I didn't get a prize or anything, but they actually put it in the magazine.
They published it.
In other words. So that was my delight. And I was able to show me missus in the parish magazine. Look at this, you know." And she was a little bit impressed, you know. Mm. And so every now and then I would sort of keep that up. And then I sent in another poem. I started sending in a few to various magazines. And I got a couple of prizes for the poems. Mm. And basically, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
So then, when I was made redundant, then I was out of work for a while, and so I used to spend me time when I, you know, in those times, was, that particularly was very hard to get a job that would suit you, you know, and so I was doing a bit of writing, and I'd done another kind of got involved in a kind of a writing group, and you would send in stuff. And they would have a competition.
So you'd
sort of get good. They'd give, in fairness, they were like critics. They'd kind of criticise your work.
Good grounding, though.
And they'd say, you know, well, you know, we like that one. And you might send in three. Now, poems were different than songs because they were just talking words. You wouldn't have to make it rhyme or make it a June and a moon and, yeah. and I you know. Yeah. So I started doing things like that, and it just got into its phrase that just became part of my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And no matter where we went on our holidays, I'd always bring a little notebook with me. And
the pencil and the notebook.
So that was the way. It was kind of like that. I just had a used to doing it. I'd done it to try and get rid of stress. And then eventually I done it because that's what I did. You know, yeah. If people, I was out with people and even in pubs, I'd have me notebook, they'd take it and I'd write, "What are you writing down there?"
I can imagine the notebook and be on the
table. So things like that would happen to me, and I taught. And so I did go to a couple of English classes because I hadn't got a great education when I was young. And it wasn't that I needed to know about life, but I needed to know about words about how to describe something. You know, you know the way you go out to the sea and you'd be looking at the sea. I was always fascinated by the waves coming in, but you kind of say, "Yeah, but how am I going to describe this? Well, how do you put it down on paper?"
Yeah.
So I struggled on, and eventually just got the kind of idea of it, and then that's actually where it came from. So I got a book together a good few years ago then, and I had poems in it, and then I had it just drifted by. It was just a time in your life when you're doing it. So then when my wife got sick then in more recent years, again, she had dementia and she had a few other problems, unfortunately. But we still had a good life, but I found that it helped me while I was minding her to be doing something.
Yeah.
You know, something else.
Take your mind off.
Take your mind off things, you know.
But of course, in poetry, it's quite often, it's not the word you put in that applies, it's what it indicates as such.
That's right,
And to some people, it could be one thing, and it's like James Joyce, they read it and somebody else has read it. That's not the same book you were reading as I was reading, type of thing, you know. Yeah. What you leave out is just as essential as what you put into the book. And maybe just give us one or two of your little poems.
I just say I was talking about the sea there, and I remember one of my daughters used to say to me. Funny enough, I think she was having a bit of stress too, and she'd say to me, she'd take time off out of work, and so I'd say, "What are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going down to Doolin in County Clare."
Oh yeah, I know Doolin, yeah.
And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "It's great down there, that there's a lot of trad music and in the pubs, and you can stay over."
It's all
And she said, "I need to get away from Dublin for a while to get out of the way." So she was telling me, and I was kind of saying, She said, I'll bring you down someday, Dad, with me, you know. Because she used to go down with our pals and that, you know.
And Liston Barn is just around the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Here,
so I kind of thought, right? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So I just wrote this one about, I was wondering, why is she going down to Doolin? What's she going to do down there?
You know, there's nothing down near a harbour.
Yeah. And then I said, well, she's going there because she feels she needs to go there.
Therapeutic
stuff, yeah. So I call this poem Seeking Doolin. When urban drudge workloads reach overflow and life goals tumble like lodestars in fall, she pushed westward o'er Clare's winding roads, seeking an ocean mother's soothing embrace. With proud hunting hounds of surf rushing in, she seeks composure mid fresh tidal turns, while mini squall droplets fall soft on her face and waves full of grace wash doubts from within. This proud ferry port is a beacon for those tough island folk who move to Shannos. Native tongue talk in trad music houses, a spectrum of comfort for crack guaranteed. Perhaps she might stay in the quaint B&B near the ocean vistas past rain-whipped quay, whose misted headlands take her somehow back to daydreaming tides to a simpler time. What should a girl do in this gulf stream of things, as seabirds shadow their soulmate below, who find in the fraught texture's ebb and flow that Doolin's enigma is carried within? So that's my... She didn't tell me exactly what she was doing, but I figured she was looking for comfort and solace and a break away from it all, you know.
So chilling out, as they call it.
Chilling out, very well put, because... But that's the kind of thing that it would... I'd be trying to figure out, what's she doing down there? Why is she going there? And that, and then you suddenly get, well, she's obviously getting relief, you know.
What's the objective of this visit?
And I think even in the world we live in today, I mean, from my knowledge of work, a lot of years doing work, I found that stress levels are something that we never knew anything about.
People burn out. Burn up and all.
I mean, when I got stressed, when it was, I was probably about 50-ish. And I
midnight crisis.
And I kind of go, I said, I don't know what this is. People did say that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, middle-age crisis or whatever. And you're kind of go, yeah, but what is that? Why am I getting this, you know? And I had to take time off out of work over it.
Post-traumatic stress.
Yes. So I think it's a kind of a lesson learned for everybody that you really need to take a break now and then. And even though the job you're in, you may like it, there's usually a lot of... sometimes the more willing you are, the more the boss man will say, would you stay back for the next couple of weeks? You know, you're a great person, and we make you a kind of charge hand, and before you know where you're
flogged to death.
You'll be flogged, exactly. And then I remember working weekends, like, you know, stuff like that. And my missus and the kids are saying, are we not going out for the weekend, Dad? I kind of go,
I've got to go to work.
I'm very busy in work. Now, there was a money attraction as well, I must admit.
Well.
And when you have a growing family, you're inclined to say, well, maybe it won't be here next year, so you take it. But I did find that writing and getting away like that was a great idea, you know. Yeah. And so it's nice also to do the... You're involved in I always done a lot of beach walking anyway, you know, on the sea.
That was
my hobby, was up in the hills walking, and with the kids and with the missus, we'd go walkies up into the hills. We'd stay over down in Ockram in County Wicklow, and we'd spend a weekend there just walking in the woods. And I thought it was wonderful, like, you know. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't do that every week or every month.
No.
So you had to kind of balance your lifestyle. Yeah. So it took me a long time really to get back to normal. So that's basically where I think the poetry came from.
And you know, like you say, you started, I won't say by accident.
No.
But by designed accident.
Yeah, designed. That was a good, yeah, it's a good way of putting it because it's a kind of necessary. Now, people can do, if you're into gardening, for instance, it's a mate of mine does gardening. He has an allotment now, actually. He's retired and he has an allotment. But that sort of is the same thing. It's kind of getting your brain away from
the routine of every day,
the pressures of work, pressures of domestic mortgages and all that stuff coming at you. You need to be able to go out among the cabbage and sort of say, this is where, be with this, look for snails in the cabbage.
But I was just going to say, pick slugs off the
exactly.
cabbage.
So it's kind of anything like that. I mean, you could do it through sport as well. But then sometimes...
You have to be a bit younger.
Yeah,
of course you don't. There's all sorts of Pilates and all sorts of...
Yeah, but there's amazing stuff out there now that people get involved in, like, you know.
Well, that reminds me, Tai Chi, which the Chinese perfected.
Yeah.
And lots of people do that before they go to work.
Yeah, that's true.
De-stress themselves before they get into the office or whatever.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So, and that's, of course, quite a lot of boring sitting down at the one desk doing what, watching the computer it is now. There's different types of stress. Phyllis Building now has under pressure all the time. Get this done, this was this, it'll be finished by Friday.
I was talking to a man's son I know, and he's working in this high tech industry, you know. And he's getting very well paid for it now. And he's one of the top people, I believe, in his... I won't go into the name of the industry. Mm. But he was telling me that... I said, are you in a job now that you really love? And he said, well, I am. But he said, there's only one thing wrong with it, like most things. Mm. And I said, what's that? He says, you're never really away from the job. He said, even though they have great conditions, the money is terrific... But he said, they may ring you up on Sunday morning at home and say, we need you in now. And he said,
you have to go.
And he said, it's like that. And he said, you have beautiful restaurants in there and they've actually gyms, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All kind of things. But he said, you're never really away from the job. Mm. And he tried to encourage you to take sort of holidays with people from the job. And if they can get you to go somewhere, they might pay for half it, to go away somewhere to South Africa, say, and say, oh, wasn't this terrific? But you're actually going into some high-tech place in South Africa.
To advise them or get advice.
To get skills. And they, I mean, they're not. I'm not saying that the people that employ them are bad people, but they're always thinking, well, if we can pick up more skills over there and bring it home with them,
we can expand
our business here.
Yeah, so business is business.
So if you think logically about that, as I say, at least in our normal jobs that we were in during our lives, when it came to the Friday, usually you had a weekend off and then you went back on it. But if you have that continuous in touch with you all the time and the phone is, you're lying on the beach and next minute, you know, beep, beep, beep or dingle, dingle, dingle and you pick it up. And you're just thinking about getting in for another swim or will I go to the karaoke tonight or whatever you're thinking, you know. And then suddenly the boss man is on and he's saying, well, where are you now, Arthur? You know, and you say, well, I'm on the beach in Santa Ponsa.
Well, we need getting the next plane.
Well, would you, I'd like to contact you now. Fix you up with Harry here. Harry has come in from New York. And I think this is...
Well, this is the way things have gone in general, you know. Everybody's under pressure.
Yeah.
A hell of a lot more pressure than my day or your day. But we were always under pressure. This has to be done and et cetera, it stresses people out to the limits.
Yeah.
And some people, you know, go beyond the limit, but however.
Yeah. Well, I have heard people talking about it on the radio, and a couple of them are even on television, and they're trying to get people to switch off their phones when they go to bed. Don't have your phone on when you go to bed, because the problem is that your brain needs to switch off too. Yeah. It doesn't need things coming at it all the time. That's what sleep is for. So well, if you switch off and don't look at anything till the morning time.
Yeah. And then there's a big load of them on.
Well, it's up.
But we're straying from the poetry.
Yeah, I know. But I think that's what, in a strange sort of way. The magic computers weren't around in my time a lot anyway. So I think the same thing applies. I think it's getting too much involved in the job, too many hours, and not some sort of a path. If you speak to most people, they're usually into a sport or some kind of music.
But then the mortgages are on the top of your head all the time.
Because as we all know, no matter how much you worry about the mortgage, or you worry about your health, or you worry about your kids' education, or you're worried about your wife's whatever, you kind of, it doesn't really do any good to you because you worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, some people worry because there's nothing to worry about.
Well, I'd say yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it's a major factor in all sorts of stresses in life, you know, and it can manifest this way in all sorts of things. Yeah. But at least yours has manifested yourself in, literary activity.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I never thought of myself as a poet or anything like that. I just thought I liked music and I used to write a song now and then for various reasons. And it was sort of like...
Well, you had to know how to spell to start
with. Well, that's why I went to English class. I wasn't a good speller at all. I had to try and get back. So that was most of it, like, you know, yeah. Most stuff that would be coming at me. I'd get out to the seashore or up into the hills and all like that.
Maneuvers again.
I just read this one. This is about the sea again. I call it the bell of the sea because I hear bells when I'm at the sea. So I'd be listening to the sound. Say, what's that? What's that trying to tell me? So this is great bell of the sea. Why do you pound? Could it be your frustration as at the fools you've found, debasing your bounty, those blood profit creeds, carving so much more than they'll ever need. Perchance I'll discover in what the tides leave behind, the tainted prow of a trawler, spinning harsh fishing line, abandoned like crab craws amid oil slicks and dross, as black gulls cry vengeance for another paradise lost. Might the moon hold the answers between heaven and earth? Within dominions of beauty are we sometimes coerced into acts of betrayal that drive us enraged to punish the headlands like a storm beast uncaged. Great bell of the sea, for whom do you toll? Can the words be deciphered in your gravel throat roar? Is it the wild heart I'm hearing breaking on the shore? With mankind uncaring, wanting more, wanting more, wanting more. So that's it. It's just we're dragging too much out of the sea, really. You know.
Yeah, well, of course we are, and we're dumping a terrible lot of stuff in.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. It's things
plastic, that, plastic, and plastic.
So it's things like that I find interesting because you kind of when you're writing something, you say, well, people are abusing the sea. And they're overfishing it, and as you say, dumping plastic into it. And we all know, because we're logical people, or relatively intelligent, that at the end of the day, if we ruin the sea, we're all ruined anyway, you know?
Yeah, well, of course, there's all sorts of other things. The sea is rising all the time, there are predictions for O'Connell Street in 10 or 20 years' time, up to two foot of water and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of going around. I think if you're poetically inclined, you look at things slightly different. And you were talking about O'Connell Street there. I have an interesting little poem here. I'll read it for you. I used to go down O'Connell Street. Every time I walk down O'Connell Street, I look at it. I know Joe is listening and he's saying to me, what are you doing with that? But I look at the spire and I say to myself, what's that for? What does it mean? Why doesn't it play some music, even ska music, something? Let's go for something, you know, ring a bell, do something. So I was looking at it last Easter, I think it was. And so this is me looking at the spire in O'Connell Street. If I were to scale its silver skin and punch holes in it, letting the wind blow through, perhaps trad tunes might play. The Mason's Apron would be nice, or the Rocky Road to Dublin, finding a point to it all. Or perhaps a needle in a groove, crackling forth a step dance, stirring those in patriotic bones whenever they passed a GPO, arm in arm with a collie in jazz, musing on being young back then, when poets and rebels fought as one. And if we find songs can't be summoned from the sterile shaft in the awesome shade of O'Connell Street at Easter time, let them listen to the cobblestones beneath, ringing with the music of daring deeds by those who sleep midst the Fenian dead, their proclamation read, their poetry intact. Now, I don't know whether people get the message, but I'm trying to say that there should be something there that's nice, you know, the... What's
well,
the
at least Cleopatra's needle was sculptured.
So you know, I mean, it's a spike. It costs, I don't know, many million it costs to put up, and it doesn't play a tune. And I say, I mean, most Irish people like a bit of music, you know, and we'd love it to blast out, as I say, a bit of ska music. What about that, Joe? You know, wouldn't it be great if you could press a button and on the side of it and select trad, jazz, you know,
valiant and you like
anything's classical, and just have a music playing for yourself. Just press a button in the centre of it.
Why don't you send that idea into the city council?
Well, I've said it to a few councillors, but they look at me.
Looked at you askance. That's another poem you can write.
Yeah, say, like, wow, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure, Paul, that's what we do. Well, they're all afraid to say anything because it's like that new printing press they got into the doll in recent times. What was that? 1.5 million or something?
1.8.
What a printing press, you know.
Well, that's
copying machine.
1.3, and you have to have a forklift to lift the paper into it. But however, that'll be debated ad infinitum now for the next, but particularly for the next election, and there'll be all sorts of predictions. Where was the measuring tape and all this?
Yeah.
But of course, that's again. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to think that they wouldn't have very... I know there are clever people working in the civil service, but they obviously threw it from back and forward to each other, and one wasn't listening to what the other was doing.
One was measuring an imperial, the other was measuring a metric.
You know, can you imagine now and then we have to get a new washing machine into the kitchen, and the first thing you would do is measure the bloody hole where you're going to put it in.
Of course, that's a logical thing to do.
Know, and then you'd figure out then how long the cable is or something like that. Then you would maybe get a guy, but it's all just...
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
But however, what are they going to print on it? Money, I hope.
Well, money now. There's a good idea.
Well, of course, we've just run out of time, and we'll be back after the break.
Okay.